The problem was the first thing on Henderson's mind when his eyes opened. What do I do about this? He'd delivered information before, but now he had something the other side really needed. It was just that he didn't have anyone to tell it to. Did the Russians really know what they had there at that camp southwest of Haiphong? There had to be a way out, and Henderson was working on that, advising his senator carefully, shading things just a little bit. That was the problem with secrets, he thought on his way out the door. You just had to let others know. Henderson rode the bus to work. He took a seat in the back, and soon a man sat down next to him. How was London? The man asked in a conversational tone. Were they that efficient? Henderson wondered.
I met someone there, Peter said cautiously.
I have a friend in London. His name is George. No trace of an accent.
George said he had a friend in town. My name is Marvin.
What are you doing for dinner tonight? Marvin asked.
Nothing much.
Do you know a place called Alberto's?
Wisconsin Avenue, yeah.
7:30, Marvin said. He rose and got off at the next stop. Alberto's was a small and rather typical mom-and-pop Italian place. Henderson found a booth in the back. Marvin arrived a few minutes later and joined him. He was of Henderson's age, a totally nondescript man.
Let's get down to business, Marvin said. We won't be doing this very often. This is a very serious business.
I know. Marvin outlined a simple system by which Peter could contact Marvin using local drops and pickups. It seemed very sophisticated to Henderson, though everything he'd just heard was kindergarten-level spycraft.
I have something now, if you're interested, Henderson told the KGB officer.
Might as well let them know how important I am. Mission stress and all, it was a relief when the C-141 thumped down at Da Nang. Saddle up, Irvin shouted as the engine noise died. A few minutes later, Albi led the Marines off the aircraft. Two trucks were waiting, which drove them to two new aircraft. These took them on the next part of the journey, a one-hour hop to the USS Ogden, where they were led to troop quarters. Kelly watched the Marines file off, wondering what came next for him.
How was the trip? He turned to see Admiral Podolsky, dressed in wrinkled khakis.
Aviators gotta be crazy, Kelly bitched.
Does get kinda long. Follow me, the Admiral ordered, leading him up into the superstructure.
Kelly looked around as they walked. Aircraft flew off one end while others circled to land on the other. Two cruisers were in close attendance, and destroyers ringed the formation. It was part of the Navy which Kelly had rarely seen, the big blue team at work, commanding the ocean. Admiral Podolsky led him to the captain's cabin, where Captain Ted Franks greeted them.
Welcome aboard, Franks said. You're Clark.
Yes, sir. Short and pudgy, Franks still had the look of a warrior.
So, when do we start? Kelly said as they settled in.
4 days, Podolsky answered. The Marines go in Friday morning, depending on weather.
Okay. There was nothing else to be said.
I don't know what to say, Doris Brown told them, looking down at her new silk blouse and skirt.
You just keep getting better, Sarah replied. They went out to Sarah's car, and Doris got in the back. Sarah drove away quickly, heading northwest toward the Catoctin Mountains. Doris directed them once in Pittsburgh, and suddenly, there it was. Home. Sarah parked the Buick, and everyone took a deep breath.
You okay? Sarah asked Doris, getting a frightened nod in response.
He's your father, honey. He loves you.
There was nothing remarkable about Raymond Brown, Sarah saw a moment later. He, too, was nervous as he came toward the car. He opened the door, helping Sandy out. Then he reached inside, and though he was trying to be brave and impassive, the man burst into tears. He helped her out and clutched her to his chest.
Let me get you inside, baby,
Ray Brown said, taking his little girl up the steps, needing to have her in his house and under his protection. The two women followed. The house was cluttered with overstuffed 40s furniture, and there were framed photos everywhere. A dead wife, a dead son, and a lost daughter. In the security of the house, father clutched daughter again. "Honey," he said, "the things I said, I was wrong. I was so damned wrong. It's okay, Daddy. Thank you for letting me. Dor, you're my little girl." Nothing more had to be said. Doris broke the embrace with a giggle and headed for the bathroom. Raven Brown turned to his guests. I don't know what I'm supposed to say. "That's okay," Sarah said, smiling her benign doctor's smile. "But we need to talk. This is Sandy O'Toole, by the way. Sandy's more responsible for your daughter's recovery than I am." "Hi," Sandy said, and handshakes were exchanged. "Doris still needs a lot of help, Mr. Brown," Sarah said. "She's been through a really terrible time. Can we talk a little bit?" Raymond Brown nodded, and Sarah told him that Doris would need psychiatric help, and that she had arranged with a friend for confidential counseling. She took a deep breath, then told him that Doris had been through a horrible experience, and that he needed to be strong for her, that no matter what awful things he might learn. "Doc," he interrupted softly, "that's my little girl. She's all I have, and I'm not going to foul up and lose her again. I'd rather die." "Mr. Brown, that is exactly what we needed to hear." Phase one of Operation Boxwood Green began just before dawn. The carrier USS Constellation turned to port, and two cruisers and six destroyers followed suit. But the real action was in officers' country. In the captain's quarters, the faces around the table were deadly serious. The latest set of surveillance photos had come aboard. Kelly lifted the blow-ups. "Still people in the towers."
"Guarding something," Albie agreed.
"Gentlemen, it looks pretty normal to me," Kelly said. "The command team arrives tomorrow," Podolsky said. "And the next day, I go swimming," Kelly said.
"So, you replace Billy and Rick yet?" Morello asked.
"That'll take a while, Eddie," Henry replied. "He's gonna mess up our deliveries."
"Who's gonna take care of Philadelphia now?" Morello demanded.
"We're working on that," Tony Piaggi answered.
"I'll make your damn delivery while Henry gets his shit back together," Morello said. Show a little panache, Morello thought. Hell, he'd show the guys in Philly, and maybe they could do for him what Tony wouldn't do.
"Yeah." "Sure you want to take the chance, Eddie?" Henry asked with an inward smile. This WAP was so easy to predict.
"Fuck yeah."
"Okay," Piaggi said. "You make the call and set it up."
Henry was right, Piaggi told himself. It had been Eddie all along making his own move. How foolish. How easily dealt with.